Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt season one is over or still going. I don't know. The binge format is weird, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hey everyone, Mike Bloom here, one of the contributors to Post Show Recaps and the War Up Has a Planet Sphere. And I am joined by a very special guest, always entertaining and a huge fan of everything with this show. It is the one and only Haley Strong. Haley, how you doing today?
I'm great. I'm excited to finally break into the PSR world. I've dabbled in the Rob Has a Podcast and in the wrap-up shows, but this is my first time over on here, so this is fun.
Yeah, so you've been trapped in a bunker, and I am the SWAT team member that has opened your world up to the daylight that is Post-Show Recaps.
I hope I become a viral video. No, I'm just kidding. Please don't make me a viral video.
As you wish. But so Haley and I are here to talk about a show called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which at the time we're recording this, dropped onto Netflix about a little more than a week ago in a 13 episode format. And in true Netflix fashion, all the episodes kind of got dumped onto everyone at once. And Haley and I have both watched the entire season, and we figured before we get too far away from the season premiere or series premiere date, we'd talk about it a little bit. This is something that I think Haley and I both immensely enjoyed. I think the way we're going to do this is we'll start by giving our general thoughts about the series for those of you that are listening and might be a little iffy on whether you want to start watching the show or not. And then once you decide yes, because I know you will, and you start watching the episodes, then we'll dive into some more I won't say spoilery stuff because there's not too much, you know, significant plot action that really that will really spoil people. But there are some things that if you don't want to know about before you watch the series that you could probably tune out at that part. But I guess to start off, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is a series that it was created by Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, who also co-created the hit NBC show 30 Rock. Now, Haley, were you a 30 Rock fan before you dived into Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
I was a huge 30 Rock fan. I love Tina Fey. I loved her on SNL. I watched 30 Rock pretty well from the beginning. I think it started when I was in high school, and that show really had a lot to do with how I fell in love with comedy and this kind of type of television show. So Tina Fey has always been a huge inspiration to me. So when I heard that she was coming out with another show, I was so excited.
So now I'm a 30 Rock fan too, but I'm kind of intrigued, and we can kind of tie this again into Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. What exactly drew you to both of these shows in terms of the style of humor? What made you really want to like dive whole haul into either one of these shows?
I don't want to sound like uppity on myself, but I thought the humor was really clever. And you could watch these series over and over again and then still pick up new jokes every time, kind of like watching Arrested Development. Just really like throw away lines that you wouldn't realize is a joke until you went back and picked up on it. And a lot of things tie together. I also love a lot of the pop culture references. I'm a huge pop culture fan. So those things always make me laugh.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on both of those counts. These shows are so interesting in a way that it's not even necessarily the jokes that are being said, but the rate at which they're said is ridiculous. I mean, this is the type of show that will cram 6 jokes in the course of like a 5-line piece of dialogue. And like you said, it's crazy. It's a type of show where you have to keep rewinding it and playing it and watching it again and again so that you are able to hear all the jokes, since you're laughing so much from the first one that you miss jokes 2 through 5. So the pure density of the jokes that happen throughout the show is absolutely ridiculous. I would put it on the level of something like Arrested Development or even something like, you know, old school Simpsons, which tended to cram jokes in there as well. And it's one of those things of like, if this show was longer than half an hour, I don't know about you, but I would be like exhausted just trying to keep my brain wrapped around it. I don't usually watch Gilmore Girls, but I know it's a very similar thing in terms of they're talking so quickly. There's so many jokes going on that it's hard to wrap your brain around it sometimes.
Yeah, and they do a really good job at mixing in easy to get jokes. You're like slapstick comedy almost. Like in the very first episode where it was, they're at NBC and like the Today Show. And I was like, when we come back, one of these women are going to get a makeover, and you look at them and it's clear that only one of them is still kind of in that bunker garb. Mm-hmm. So like that made me laugh. And then you always have like the little slight jokes kind of threaded in between all of those two.
Yeah, so let's not bury the lead too far. Haley, for those that are uninformed in our listening audience and want to know more about the show, can you briefly summarize the main facets of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Of course I can. So Kimmy and three other women were stuck in a bunker for 15 years. They were kidnapped by a reverend who told them that the apocalypse happened, so he was trying to keep them safe. They were then rescued by a SWAT team, and on a trip to New York, they're known as like the Mole Women. So they were doing a bunch of press all over. In a trip to New York after the Today Show, Kimmy decided that she wanted to stay in New York and kind of try and build her life there. So she finds an apartment, she gets a job, she tries to go to school, she tries to really get her life together while trying not to show or not tell people that she was one of the Mole Women.
So this is, for all intents and purposes, a pretty dark concept on paper.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, but it doesn't ever feel like dark and heavy.
And that's the interesting thing. And I mean, 30 Rock has some pretty dark concepts to that show as well. Reading the reviews of this show as people have been watching it, one of the key things that I know the AV Club has pointed out is that like the show can sometimes feel a little formulaic, specifically in those middle episodes when it seems like, you know, Kimmy has a problem, then she runs into a difficulty, but it gets solved by the end of the episode. But it's still existing with this dark thread underneath of like, this is a woman who is getting adjusted to the real world after being trapped in a bunker for 15 years. And as long as you keep that in the back of your head, it really becomes an unconventional show.
I completely agree. And like you said, a few of the middle episodes, especially if you watch it kind of the way I watched it, I watched the first three episodes one day, and then like 2 days later I watched the other 10. So in the middle, it's kind of like, okay, like here's your sitcom, blah, blah, blah. But like you say, if you keep it in mind, like what a kind of awesome and weird concept this is, it really brings you back to what the show is about.
Yeah, so you actually bring up a good point here. So as I talked about before, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is released in this Netflix format, which is, you know, all episodes at once, binge at your own risk. So I'm curious, you know, 30 Rock was a show that obviously did episodes weekly or sometimes longer if there were breaks in between. And initially Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was licensed to be aired on NBC before it got sold to Netflix. Do you think the Netflix format lends itself well to this show? Or do you think you'd be able to appreciate the show more if it was weekly instead of all at once?
That's very interesting. I never actually thought about that. I think it would be more appreciated as a weekly show on NBC. But I think that's because when it was written, when it was shot, it was meant to be on NBC. And it wasn't until like the editing stages that it was really realized what the audience was going to be. So maybe we'll see those kinds of changes in season two that really lends itself to a binge watching format.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point that, you know, though this show got sold to Netflix, it was in those editing stages. So, you know, I if people are watching it expecting to be like, oh, Netflix show, that means it's going to be boobs and people cursing like all the other Netflix shows. They will be sorely disappointed. But I feel like that doesn't even fit into the tone that's going on. This is not like going to be dirty 30 Rock.
No, it's even more lighthearted than 30 Rock. Like 30 Rock almost always had kind of not like a negative tone, but like a pessimistic tone, where this is always very upbeat, and Kimmy's runs into a lot of struggles, but she tries to remain positive through all of it.
Yeah. And I think that actually centers around the central character in the show. I mean, like you said, Liz Lemon, while she can be an optimist and she's obviously kind of like a workaholic, she kind of does have a very cynical view of the world. And as a result, all the characters around her are played kind of cynically. You know, Jack Donahue is a great example of like the corporate synergy mind frame. And, you know, Jenna Maroney is the stereotypical diva actress blown out to wild proportions. Whereas it seems like with Kimmy Schmidt, I mean, you really see her influence on like all these other characters are kind of even someone, a character like Titus, is like wildly optimistic. And I think that's an influence of Kimmy's kind of philosophy on all the characters around her. Like, there are very few characters in this show, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that seem to be like absolutely negative. And when she does get in contact with that person, like Richard Kind's teacher, for example, in one episode, then it's very jarring. Everyone seems very positive in this show, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why I really enjoy it.
They really do. And especially like the four, for lack of a better term, the mole women, like throughout the series, they're very positive. Like Kimmy gets into an argument with, is it Cindy or Cynthia?
Cindy.
They get into an argument, but it's never like really bashing. It's just and they resolve it. Spoiler alert, they resolve it, but it's a very positive thing throughout. And like you say, it's almost jarring when you have a really negative or, I don't know. Yeah, a negative character.
Yeah, which is cool. It's the same creators as 30 Rock, and it's really fun to see these creators try something completely different with a completely different character. And I mean, you have to feel that part of that is influenced by the main actress, Ellie Kemper, who, for those of you that are Office fans, might know her as Erin from The Office or from her work in Bridesmaids or 21 Jump Street. But from the impression I've gotten, that's just kind of who Ellie Kemper is. She's extremely sunny person.
Yeah. And you see that stream through all of the characters she's played. Like, it's that upbeat, you know, bubbly personality.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any more general things you want to impart upon those who have not listened to the show yet? I guess if you have any recommendations or advice to give people who are on the fence about watching it, what would you say to them right now, Haley?
Get off the effing fence and watch this show. It is great. If you like humor, you'll love this.
That's a blanket statement, but you know what? I'll completely subscribe to that as well. I'm
a hyperbolic person. Yeah. I'm all in or all out.
Perfect. Perfect. You fit right in with this show. I would say that if anyone out there is not sure about it, I think from the everyone that I've checked through social media that has watched this show, I think there's only one person out of like 30 or so that absolutely hated it.
Do they like Joy?
He didn't give any sort of rationale behind it. He might be one of those social media people that's just fishing for comments by making outlandish statements. So you know, good for him if he's drawing ire that way, as accomplishing that goal. But a point is, I think surveying the mass community that I've experienced, people really, really love this show. I wouldn't say it's suited to any specific style of humor. You know, this isn't it's not a very like quote unquote stylistic show that you need to be like, oh, you really need to be in a mood to watch it. Maybe something along the lines of Arrested Development, but it's just a really fun and joyous and surprisingly positive show in spite of its very dark undertones. So
yeah, it covers a lot of different types of humor. So I think that's what makes it so appealing to everyone.
Yep. So if you're on the fence, as Haley said, hop off that fence, make sure you didn't rip a hole in your pants, and go to Netflix and watch.
Steal your best friend's password.
I will not condone that, but Haley will be sure to
ask them first.
Okay. All right. And we don't want any sort of grand theft.
Get their consent.
Netflix password. Consent is always great. So go do that. And then, so pause the podcast here and then start it back up through any medium of choice when you finish watching all the episodes. But for those of you that have, let's soldier on ahead now. And Haley, we're now in international waters in terms of spoilage. Anything goes. Let's discuss any and all plot points from this first 13 episode season. Now, I'll start by saying, I think you mentioned this before, that this show was, I think it got picked up for two seasons from the start, right? It wasn't just picked up for
yeah,
one.
It did.
So I'm wondering, you know, with the way the season left us, do you think they left it like on a cliffhanger? Do you think they set up enough things for the second season, or did you feel like it closed on enough things to really make this first season kind of coalesce?
I think it ended things where it needed to end. There was no like season to season cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And I like that finality, and some people don't, but I always need that closure with shows. I hate waiting to figure out what happens next. So I liked having that. But I think the show has a lot of opportunities to move into the second season. Like some plot lines have closed, but there's still this whole world for Kimmy to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess in terms of the plot lines that we're closing, I think the big one, I'm assuming the mole women thing will be referenced throughout season two, but it seemed like the whole like Durnsville and Reverend Wayne, John Gary Wayne, I think his name is. I think that whole plot line got pretty much closed, right? Do we think that the Reverend's going to show up anytime again in season two? Or do we think, you know, two episodes were kind of done with going to Durnsville for now?
I'm sure he'll show up in some capacity. I doubt he's going to be like released on parole and like kidnapping other women. But I feel like the mole woman or Cindy at least is going to play a role in the next season, just because she was such a big part of Kimmy's life. She just can't cut her out. She's a friend, and I think she's going to stay there.
Yeah, would you consider Cindy Kimmy's best friend? I had a tough time trying to figure that out throughout the season.
She's a friend, but Kimmy was always more of her caretaker, and I feel like they really leaned on each other for support during this. They were definitely the closest of the women in the bunker, because they were in similar age, similar mindset, similar background. I probably would be her best friend, but Kimmy probably doesn't really know what it's like to have another best friend.
That's true. She did get kidnapped when she was 8, and they like,
no, it was grade 8. She was 13.
Grade 8. Okay.
13 or 14.
That makes more sense. I was trying to do the math in my head, and I'm 8 just popped out for some reason. That makes a lot more sense, because again, going back to Ellie Kemper's performance, I think the way she communicates and the way she experiences the world is very much like a 13-year-old. You know, I think they, in the flashbacks they show and throughout the last two episodes of the season, they do show her as being the most resilient of the mole women in terms of directly standing up to the Reverend's BS. But as soon as she enters that real world, she is just, you know, in awe of everything. And she's like 13 again. It's basically like 13 going on 30 in the form of an apocalyptic TV show.
And there's no Mark Ruffalo.
Not yet.
Not yet. That's a good point. I would love to see some Mark Ruffalo up in here.
Yeah. So I think, again, this show, I feel like, would not work nearly as well if Ellie Kemper did not sell it. And I mean, she does. One of the things that I loved, and I think it's very demonstrative of her performance, is like, I think it's episode 2 when we first meet Xanthippe, and we'll have more to talk on her later. But, you know, she's like, you're a fraud, Kimmy Schmidt, and I'm going to find out who you are. And Ellie Kemper just goes, I know you are, but what am I? It's just like the perfect representation of her character, of like still kind of childish, but at the same time, so assertive and so positive. It's just, it's such a fit. She's so great to watch. But I will say something as a bit of a caveat, that I felt like in those last two episodes, kind of taking her out of that was a little jarring to me. I don't know. How did you feel about that, Haley?
Yeah, I agree. I love Kimmy's character, because I just feel like it's a character we haven't seen before. Like you say, so assertive, but yet so childish. And it's refreshing to see someone like this. Yeah, the end of the season, it kind of, she has a shift where she's really, really trying to take the lead in things, and things just aren't going the way she wants, and things are falling apart for her, and she gets a little more jaded.
Yeah, which is interesting. I don't know. I kind of wish, I still wanted to, you know, even though it was 11 episodes before she kind of made that shift, I still kind of wanted to see that. And maybe it was taking her out of New York for those two episodes.
I was just going to say, I think that's what it was. I think it was being in Durnsville again and just being in that place where you don't want to be, where you had pretty much just such a horrifying experience that lasted 15 years. Like, why would you ever want to go back to that place? And so that kind of brought her to that jaded place in her mind again.
Yeah. So, and she became like a little more serious, which, I mean, great on Ellie Kemper as well, that she's able to kind of have that range and not just play this one note character. But hopefully when she comes back to New York in season two, hopefully she will, I'm assuming she will, she'll be able to kind of turn that bubbly personality on again, because it's something that I really enjoyed. Now, talking a little bit about Kimmy's storylines, as you said before, you know, she gets a job, she goes to school, and then she gets involved with a love triangle for a couple of episodes. I'd be interested to know, Haley, I mean, you seem like the resident RHAP expert on romance that's not named for Francesca Hoagie. What were your thoughts on this whole love triangle storyline that lasted a few episodes?
It's an honor to be given that title by you. There was kind of a bunch of different love stuff throughout the season, like even a little bit before the love triangle with the nanny, the other nanny. What was he?
Oh, yeah. Charles. I think he was the tutor for Buckley.
Yeah. Charles and then the old guy. There was kind of love triangle there almost. It was clear, like the episode was basically like Kimmy kisses a boy. So it was so obvious, like she hasn't gone through a lot of that, even though throughout the episode, you kind of hear like, yeah, we had to do a lot of weird sex stuff in the bunker, but she still hasn't had that relationship. So there was that kind of in the beginning. And then as soon as she told Charles she loved him accidentally, he was kind of out and we didn't see him ever again. Like, would you really quit a job over that? I don't know. But later on in the season, we do see the love triangle between her Vietnamese friend and Logan and Dong.
Yeah.
And Logan was just very, I didn't like their relationship. It seemed creepy.
Yeah. It didn't seem like they were like really had any sort of chemistry, you know. Even when they met at Jacqueline's fancy party, it seemed like almost an afterthought that he, you know, liked her. As much as I loved all the Cinderella allusions that were going on there, it didn't really make sense to me on a chemistry level to see them to see like, you know, him be like, oh yes, now we're dating, and her saying, oh yes, I'd love to date you. Maybe like you said, it's you know, she never really had a boyfriend before, so maybe she kind of grabbed at the first opportunity, but then she realized that you had someone like Dong who has a personality much more akin to yours, and now you've kind of screwed yourself in a way.
Mm-hmm. And like, she liked having the attention from a guy, and like obviously as a, you know, like a 13-year-old mentality, you're gonna like that. You're gonna like someone who's taking care of you. She just doesn't really get the difference yet between just having a boyfriend and having like a relationship.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, he also seems like a very like dependent person. You know, he is a self-proclaimed daddy's boy, and I'm not speaking of the hit 1930s musical that ended halfway through a sentence, but it seemed like, you know, she seems like she's very independent, considering that, I mean, first episode she's like, nope, I'm just gonna stay in New York and see what happens. And he seems to come from a position of like, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm depending on my parents for money, and I have everything handed to me. And as opposed to someone like Dong, who is an illegal Vietnamese immigrant who like works every minute of his life, that's a lifestyle that I think Kimmy can gel with more than the posh rich boy.
Yeah, it's a stark contrast. It's almost very Pretty in Pinkish, even though I've never seen the movie. I know the plot line mostly.
Uh-huh.
But what's Kimmy gonna do with a dolphin in her apartment?
Yeah, it's a mammal, so it can breathe.
That's true. Logan, good point.
Well, you know, the dolphin died on the sidewalk, didn't it?
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Rip dolphin. I want to go back to Charles for a second, because it is really interesting that, like, I'm glad that after that episode that they kind of did away with that, because the big thing I was afraid of was that they were going to tease at the two of them, you know, getting together the whole season. So to have that not happen was nice. It was very atypical, but it was weird to just get rid of him after that episode, you know, to get four episodes into a 13 episode season to just have him disappear. I don't know if he was if the character was fired, or whether he's just kind of, you know, I forget the name of the brother in Happy Days, but he kind of just went around into the pantry and never came out. But it's weird that character just disappeared from the existence of the show.
Yeah, maybe that was their intent to have that, but I don't know. It just seemed a little jarring. I like continuation in my shows, and for me, that just kind of lacked it. Like, there's never even reference to him, like, saying he quit or anything.
Yeah.
It was just, he was gone.
And that brings up a good point too, because this is a first season of a show, and first seasons of shows tend to experiment a lot in terms of tones and characters, et cetera, et cetera. Do you feel like this felt like a first season to you, or do you think it was trying some things out, or do you think it had like a set construct in motion and was just, you know, going balls to the wall from minute one?
That's a good question. I think it was, if mostly followed a construct, and I think that has something to do with the fact that Tina Fey and Robert Carlock have done this before. They've had a show that followed what they wanted to say, and I think this was very reminiscent of that. They didn't really need to experiment a whole lot, but I think they did to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that, you know, I think they kind of worked the kinks out through first season 30 Rock. I mean, you remember the first few episodes of 30 Rock season one were very jarringly different from what they decided to go in, which was this very kind of madcap, goofy, chaotic tornado of humor. So I agree. I think, you know, it was the same creator, so they kind of jumped into it with having something in mind, as opposed to something like Better Call Saul from Breaking Bad, which, you know, was going to have a different tone from the beginning. I would argue that they're still kind of trying to figure out that tone. But this one from here seemed like it had its ideas in mind, though we can also counter that by saying those last two episodes seem to be very different from the first 11. So maybe things are going to start swaying in the direction of what those other two episodes resembled.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what they go for in the second season, both in tone and in storyline.
Yeah. Absolutely. Did you enjoy some of these Kimmy storylines? Like, like you said, you binged them all at once, so things are kind of in a daze. But do you have any Kimmy storylines that you enjoyed, some that you weren't so excited about?
I know some throwaway jokes I was a huge fan of was in the episode where she goes to school. As a big baseball fan and a Canadian, I loved all of the Expos jokes. Like, they just killed me. And my brother said the same thing. Like, when she was like, wait, the Expos moved? It was just those kinds of things. Really, the pop culture stuff that she's missed out on. Not knowing how to use, like, a phone, I loved. Like, taking a selfie she didn't know how to do. Like, I thought those kinds of things were really great. And I thought it was very close to what someone would have been if they were in that situation, like kind of lacking that knowledge.
Yeah, I'll throw a few out there through storylines out there that I enjoyed. I liked the episode, I think it was episode 4, with the plastic surgeon, when Kimmy ultimately makes a decision initially to like get her face completely rechanged, that she doesn't, you know, resemble who she is anymore. Because as I talked about before, the show does a really nice job of like having an undercurrent throughout of like, this is a woman who's clearly traumatized by this situation and she's trying to adjust back to the real world. So I love this idea of like her kind of being fed up with trying to get adjusted and trying to take quote unquote the easy road out, even though this requires getting a facelift from Martin Short. But then she, you know, her wits get the best of her and she decides she doesn't want to do it. That's a really cool one that I enjoyed. The Kimmy Goes to School one, I kind of wish they'd focused more on it, you know? It was like one episode, and then they kind of just offhandedly mentioned GED class. I mean, we got a lot of dong, obviously. that is, I can't believe it took us, you know, almost half an hour to make a dong joke. yeah, I would say that, you know, you don't even have to have Richard Kind in there. I would like to see more, especially because that school seemed hilarious with all the jokes about, you know, the guy that's hiding in the school.
Yes,
beds,
exactly.
Or the fact that the nurse is a teddy bear and the gym teacher is a cardboard cutout of Michael Jordan. Like, I feel like they have a wealth of school jokes that they can make. And I mean, Kimmy, I don't think has finished her GED, so maybe we'll go back to the school again. But that's something I wanted to see more of.
Yeah, I would like to see that. I also like the plot line with Jacqueline and her husband. And we didn't really touch on this before, but Jane Krakowski, who was in 30 Rock and played a similar kind of narcissistic character. I don't feel like this is a stale character, though. Like, I don't feel like she's just playing Jenna Maroney again.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
That's a good call. I feel like Jacqueline has a lot more colors to her. And I won't just say that because she's Native American. She can paint with all the colors of the wind. Jacqueline Helen is, I agree, she's definitely not a one note character that Jenna Maroney kind of was. But Jenna Maroney, you know, Jane Krakowski did a fantastic job of making sure that she wasn't too, you know, driving the character into the ground. But Jacqueline starts as kind of a one note character of like a posh, daft, kind of snarky rich woman. But then her storyline is very interesting throughout this season. You know, she, her rich husband who's constantly traveling, she finds out is womanizing through a series of plot twists, and she ends up divorcing him. And the last episode specifically deals a lot with her kind of coming into her own as an independent woman. And it's really, really interesting. And, you know, we, again, as like you said, we haven't seen Jane Krakowski really tackle this type of work, and it's really interesting to watch. And between working with that and the Native American flashbacks, did you enjoy this whole, these couple of storyline mentions that she's Native American, Haley?
Those were so weird, but like I liked it. Like it was very reminiscent of 30 Rock, just having like these like, wait, what kind of moments.
It's strange. It's, but I, you know, I love how they had Jane Krakowski play younger Jacqueline.
Yeah,
you know, she was supposed to be like 16 or something. It's very reminiscent of 30 Rock, but it's a little weird. But I on the other hand, I do love the mentions that they make to it in the present timeline. You know, like in the final episode of the season, like she uses the Four Winds advice that was imparted to her by her father to help find their way to Durnsville, Indiana. So I like how it snaked its way into the plot. I would say I think Jacqueline stuff also, I don't know. I was wondering if they'd make a lot more comments on like the 1% and the rich parts of America. And they seem to, again, for those first few episodes, but then they kind of did away with it. I wonder, you know, what is going to be in store for Jacqueline now that she goes back to New York. I think she's still going to be rich, as considering Kimmy calculated that compound interest for her, but I don't know if we're going to be making as many jokes about the elite.
That's very true. It's going to be really interesting to see where her character goes in the second season, like whether or not she tries to find another rich guy or if she just continues that independent streak on her own.
Yeah, and it's not even like independent in terms of like being romantically independent. Like she needed someone to like, you know, take off her dress and spoon her. So it'll be interesting to see how she.
Okay, who doesn't need that?
That's very true. And, you know, I'm very grateful every day that I'm going to be marrying someone who will take off my dress and spoon me. But some might not be so lucky, such as Jacqueline. So it'll be interesting to see where she goes. Let's segue into Titus for a little bit.
Okay.
Titus is a really, really interesting character. And I mean, we were talking before about people who might be one note characters on the surface, but really make it work. And I mean, Titus Burgess, who is mostly well known as a Broadway actor, though he is most well known on screen for portraying DeFawn from what was it? House of Jordan on 30 Rock. A nice little like throwaway role when Tracy's wife had her reality show.
So he
plays Titus Andromedon, who is an out of work, struggling wannabe actor. And when we first see him, he's working as a knockoff Iron Man in Times Square, but then he kind of finds his own. Kimmy helps him kind of pursue his dream again, and it seems like we get a lot of storylines of him trying to find stardom in one way or another. AV Club brings up some interesting comments that in a lot of these episodes, Titus seems almost independent from Kimmy. Like the B storyline is almost always about Titus. Did you enjoy those, Haley? Did you think that Titus worked better with Kimmy, or were you fine putting him on his own in these storylines?
I was fine putting him on his own for some of these storylines because he provides such a stark contrast to what Kimmy is, because he's kind of that broken down. He's, you know, he moved from a small town in the Midwest, and he's gone through those struggles, and has a very pessimistic outview on life now. And Kimmy kind of helps him bring himself back to what he wants, and he kind of helps ground Kimmy. So it's a very interesting relationship they have, but I think it works for those reasons.
Yeah, and I also love how alarmingly cheap Titus is, to the point of where he went into a photo booth to take like glamour headshots of him.
I love it so much.
A la Tony Danza. It's interesting. And I mean, 30 Rock, you know, it took place in a variety show set. You know, they were able to make a lot of in-jokes about the variety show genre in general. But, and I'm happy that they were able to incorporate some show business jokes in here. I mean, the most prevalent one that I remember is the Spider-Man 2, Too Many Spider-Men. I think that's it was a perfect way to, like, poke fun of, like, the industry and also the whole Spider-Man fiasco. I know these people are not the most theatrically adept people, but I will say, as a theater nerd, I really enjoyed those storylines.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun, and it kind of gives that, you know, the dark side of living in New York and trying to pursue your dreams as a Broadway actor.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, again, the Broadway nerd in me was loving, for one episode, I think the Spider-Man episode, he has a rival, and the rival is played by an actor by the name of James Monroe Iglehart, who is a Tony winner who portrayed the genie in Aladdin on Broadway, and Titus Burgess portrayed Sebastian the Crab in Little Mermaid on Broadway. And it seems like they're I believe the in-joke in the Broadway crowd is that they're two actors that are kind of always up for the same type of roles, the fat colored character actor. So I thought that those were fun. As much as they didn't talk too much about the Broadway industry throughout the show, it's fun that they were able to kind of make that in-joke.
And that's kind of another one of those examples of bringing in so many different types of humor. So, like, that's a joke that I wouldn't have picked up on, but that's a joke you picked up on. And, you know, me being a baseball fan, the Expos things I picked up on, but you might not have necessarily grabbed those ones.
Nope. I knew what the Expos were, but I did not understand all of them.
Yeah. So it was really, there's really jokes for everyone, really, depending on what your interests are. Like, I think it's a great show for everyone.
Yeah. So, with Titus, I guess, since we're talking about the way this season ended. So Titus, you know, attempted to use Kimmy's fame for his benefit, he tries to hit the press junket and ends up completely embarrassing himself. He becomes a laughingstock and a viral hit, which, I mean, it's also, I love, so the theme song is an auto-tuned version of this, you know, this homeless, not a homeless man, but this, like, vagrant in the town that's talking about the mole women being rescued, and it's a parody of, you know, the Hide Your Kids, Hide Your Wife video. But surprisingly, that character comes back as Titus's kind of, like, cautionary tale to tell him that the other shoe will drop. And that was so cool to me that, like, it was a little meta, but, like, it was really fun to bring that character back.
I agree. I love that. Also, we didn't talk about the theme song at all, which I think is fantastic. I've had it stuck in my head for a week now.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, keep singing it to myself. I love it. And it was a very clever play on viral video culture now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. It's got... and it's also funny because viral videos are, like, that type of viral video is so, like, 2013 that I love just, like, the timeliness of it, that it's so archaic, but still, it's like you said, it's such a damn earworm. Like, it's so bubbly, and it totally gets you pumped for the show. But so Titus embarrasses himself and he becomes a big viral hit. But it turns out, and there have been a few throwaway jokes throughout the season about how Titus has a wife back home in Mississippi, and she actually finds him. I'll have to admit, I was a little disappointed that we actually got to see her. I thought it would be a little more of something that was fleshed out through random jokes. I don't know, Haley, were you excited to see Titus's wife and the potential that might bring for season two?
I was a little indifferent about her, to be honest with you. Again, it's going to be an interesting storyline that they play out in next season. And I think it's another thing that will bring you back to watching the season. Not everything was just really final and closed.
Yeah. And it's also weird that I think that was the last joke of the season, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Really, that last scene, it was actually a little weird in general in terms of, like, everything just seemed to collapse. Like, despite the Reverend being taken away, I mean, we have, you know, Don calls Kimmy and says that he had to marry someone else in order to stay within the country. And then Titus says, oh, by the way, this is my wife, too. So it seemed like they're just kind of throwing everything at the wall in the very last minute, which I'm not sure what to think about. But I mean, again, they'll have stuff to work with in season two.
Yeah, it was a lot to handle at one time, and especially watching it in such quick succession, like the whole season, I mean, it was just kind of like, oh, wait, what's going on now? Like, my brain was a little fried at the end of it.
Yeah, understandably so. Let's talk about some of these other supporting characters. Titus and Kimmy's landlord is a woman named Lillian, and I'm trying to think of like what character she reminds me of, because she's like very sketchy. I think that's the perfect way to put it, is that she's very sketchy, but she's still hilarious at the same time.
I love it. I think she's great. She's hilarious. She's such a disaster, and for both Kimmy, and she had never left New York before. So like that last episode where her and Jacqueline were like driving out of the city, and she was so lost. She was so confused over being over the Hudson. And like, it was really funny.
Yeah. And I love the random throwaway jokes about her being a very cheap landlord. Like the fact that she says, the painted dirt is the floor of the apartment. And I forget what the walls are made out of, but they're made out of something really, really cheap. And also the fact that she's like into a lot of hustling, like as soon as in that last episode when her and Jacqueline are lost on the other side of the Hudson, she immediately suggests that Jacqueline whore herself out to make $4.
Yeah, she knows how to make a buck.
Yeah. She seems like a very seasoned woman of New York. We also have, I guess I call her the main antagonist of those first 11 episodes before the Reverend comes in. Xanthippe Lannister Voorhees, which is Jacqueline's stepdaughter, correct?
Yes.
Okay, stepdaughter. And she seems like the typical teenager at first. And we get some great jokes about, the typical crowd today, like when she's texting her best friend when they're right next to each other and all they're texting each other are nonsensical emoticons. But it turns out that like she's actually, her character gets fleshed out a little bit when it turns out that like she's really not into the stuff that her friends are doing, like loose pills or drinking in the middle of Central Park. And it turns out that she likes bird watching and plays clarinet in the band, but she seems to be set on revealing who Kimmy is, though she never ends up doing so herself. I'm torn on how to feel about Xan as a character. Do you have any opinions, Haley?
I really liked her as a character. I thought she was a fun antagonist, especially because it's her and Kimmy are basically at the same mental level. So it's almost like the high school rivals. Yeah. She's a smart girl, and she's kind of the sane one in her family. Like she's living with this woman who's just, out of this world crazy. Her brother's too young to kind of understand her. Her maid doesn't really speak English, and now there's this woman who's overly positive and just, finally laying down some rules for her when she never really had any before.
Yeah, it's interesting. The thing is that very rarely in either 30 Rock or Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is there really like a straight man in the situation, someone to like react to these people. And I feel like Xan is a straight man in that, like, whenever the conversations her and Kimmy have are so great. I think there's one that's like, hey, Kimmy, like 2005 called. They want their clothes back. It's like, oh, yeah, Xan, well, 2090 called. You're dead and you haven't made an impact on the world. And it's like, I think Xan's reaction is like, what? Who are you? Like, I love the fact that it's not just her, like, straight manning it as much as she's growing angry with it as well. So I definitely enjoy those aspects of it. I'm just not sure about making her the antagonist and the whole like, mwahaha, soon I will expose you, Kimmy Schmidt. Ultimately, it didn't come to fruition. When we last saw her, she got shipped off to her mother's house in Connecticut. So we may see her come back, but I wasn't sure if the show really needed an antagonist,
That's true. But I think they needed, someone different, someone not so positive all the time, or else the show might have felt a little uppity.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Though I wonder, like 30 Rock had like a set of antagonists. You had Will Arnett's character. Chloe Grace Moretz came in to do a couple things. So I wonder if you had more characters like the Reverend who like came and went, or even like Richard Kind's teacher for one episode, if that would work better than having like Xan's always working against exposing Kimmy, which really doesn't matter anymore considering that Jacqueline knows, Titus knows, and Lillian knows now.
Mm-hmm. I hope she comes back for season two, and I hope she plays a bigger role, and she kind of is still that foil to Kimmy. me.
Yeah.
And but I, just in a different way.
Yeah, and I will say that, like with Charles, I am happy that they didn't go the more traditional sitcom route of, like, having them start off by coming to blows, but then come together over a mutual understanding of each other and become friends.
Well, they go through those ebbs and flows of it, almost. Like, you get to these points where it's like, they're almost going to be friends, and then something happens and it all falls apart.
Yeah, that's very true. I guess we can start speaking more about these tertiary characters. The other mole women, we talked about Cindy a little bit, are a lot of fun. Considering that you have Cindy, who seems to be probably the most practical one, even though she's marrying a clearly gay guy. And, you know, she's basically getting whatever she wants for being a mole woman, and she's completely fine with that. You have Gretchen, I think her name is, who wants to go down back down into the bunker and still kind of part of the cult. And then you have Rosa Maria, I think her name is, who is kind of like, you know, if I'm making a comparison, it's like there's a character in American Dad named Toshi who only speaks in Japanese, and she's kind of that way in terms of like being on the peripherals of the mole woman, but she's able to kind of break the fourth wall and speak about the group as a whole without anyone understanding them. So I like the dynamic between the four of them. We rarely saw it until the last couple of episodes, but it was a lot of fun to see the four of them talk together, specifically in the bunker in that last episode.
And I loved seeing another foil for Kimmy was actually Gretchen, because Gretchen was the one who was trying to get the Reverend off of his charges. And she was the one who wanted to go back in the bunker. She's the one who wanted to stay there. She was happy, and she was happy with where she was. And Kimmy wasn't happy. And they were always kind of fighting about that.
Yeah. That's very true. And it was interesting to see Gretchen kind of come around at the end and see through, you know, sex lies and videotape that the Reverend was lying the entire time. So it'll be interesting to see where Gretchen goes after this, too, now that the Reverend has kind of the image has been broken in her eyes. Also in Dernsville, we have Kimmy's, I'll put father in quotes, because it's the man who married her mother while she was gone before her mother ran away. And he's the most inept police officer probably ever, Randy.
And her half sister Kimmy
Kymmi.
I wish we got more about Kimmy's mother. Like, why did she run away? Who was she? What did she do? What did she do while Kimmy was in the bunker? What happened to her real father? Just a lot of her family background, and maybe we'll see more of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I would love to see more of Kimmy information pre-bunker, because she like rarely talked about it. And I agree. I would love to find out more about it. We got glimpses of it through Randy and Kimmy, but nothing outside of that.
I loved the Randy character, who was just so hellbent on doing anything he could do to like help out his girls and try to make them a family, but just like went about it the completely wrong way, like trying to rescue a cat from a tree or doing a bunch of heroin so he could find his daughter.
That was the favorite Randy thing I saw him do, was him trying to, well, I just love the conversation of him being like, excuse me, do you know where I can find this little girl? And they're like, oh, how do we not know you're a cop? It's like, oh, I'm definitely not a cop. Like, prove it. Do this heroin. So ridiculous in the vein of the show. Vein, no pun intended. I just love that he like ended up getting addicted to heroin. And Kimmy was being portrayed by Kieran Shipka, who plays Sally Draper on Mad Men. And she portrayed like the perfect angsty teenager. And I loved her fixation of like going to Olive Garden. Fun fact, I actually took my fiance to that exact Olive Garden for our anniversary a few weeks ago. So I feel as close to the Schmitz as anybody at this point.
And I wish I was at an Olive Garden. I'm actually really hungry right now, and I would love some endless breadsticks.
Do they have Olive Gardens up in Canada?
They don't. There's one in Buffalo, which isn't too far from me, but it's not. If I'm going to Buffalo for a restaurant, like I'm heading to Chipotle, I'm not heading to Olive Garden.
Wait, are there no Chipotles in Canada either?
There are a few. Like there's two in Toronto, but the Buffalo ones are closer to me.
This is an eye-opening shame.
Yeah, we also only have one Panera. Which I'm also a huge fan of.
To be fair, New York City only has one Panera as well. So, you know, we're not so different, you and I.
Do you guys have more Tim Hortons than you have Panera?
Well, New York City has a total of one Tim Hortons now. So we are equal on Tim Hortons and Paneras in the vicinity of Manhattan.
good. Quality.
Very, very quality. Let's talk about some Dong for a second. I know we talked about him before, but I just have to emphasize how kind of lovable he is as this quirky personality. I love his delivery as well. I feel like he could be he might be drawn out as a stereotype in some instances, but I do enjoy the humility and heart that the actor brings to it.
I agree, and I love the running joke of like saying the wrong word.
Yeah, like how was it sugar and road are the same word in Vietnamese?
Yeah, like that was a lot of fun, that joke throughout the series.
Yeah, and again, you know, they had the potential, if they were a little racier, they'd have the potential to like make a lot of jokes at the Vietnamese expense, but they chose not to, which I'm happy about.
I agree.
So I'll segue some more again from tertiary characters to, I guess, quadrillary characters.
Our fun guest stars.
Yeah, there were a lot of fun guest stars. Do you have any ones that stick off at the top of your head right now, Haley?
I mean, obviously John Hamm. We were kind of waiting throughout the whole series to find out who the Reverend was. There was kind of one of my friends texting me being like, hey, I think the Reverend is Jacqueline's dad because of that ponytail. Mm-hmm. And then when we find out it was John Hamm, I died. I love John Hamm. I love him in comedic roles. You know, he did well. He did so well in 30 Rock. And I think it was such a great move to bring him back as like the very charismatic Reverend.
Yeah, you and I are definitely cut from the same cloth in terms of our John Hamm adoration.
Appreciation.
And I agree, because he's able to pull out like that Don Draper smoothness when he was serving as his own lawyer. I also love throughout the trial that he was referring to himself as my client. It's just a nice little touch. And I love all his things about, like, you know, he wants to be on The Apprentice, and he made a video of himself doing karate, and his outlandish views on religion, to the point of where he calls Jesus a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. It's just like, it's again, those are also like fun statements about religion and apocalyptic cults and all that, but he just completely sells it. I mean, I didn't recognize him when they first showed that picture because of the beard until they brought him into the courtroom. And I was so happy to see him. And, you know, like you said, they probably won't let him off on parole next year, but I would love to see him even in flashbacks at some point.
I think he definitely will be. And maybe we'll see like him in prison trying to form a new cult storyline.
Oh, that'd be fun. So he'll be, he has a show ending soon. So maybe he can have some time to becoming part of the ensemble.
That would be fun to see. I also like the Nick Kroll presence. I like Nick Kroll a lot.
Yeah.
And he was only, you know, he only had like a one episode character arc, but he's kind of had those throughout a bunch of different, like he had a couple episode story arc through Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. And I love him in The League. And he's just a lot of fun as a character.
Yes. He plays Trista Fay, who is Jacqueline's spin class instructor, but then he turns out to, and you know, it's a nice little parody of the cult of SoulCycle, which is, again, I don't know if that exists in Canada, but is very, very popular here in the U.S. nowadays. But it turns out that it's kind of all a sham, and that he's this, you know, acne filled, overweight man who is sitting on a toilet the entire session. And there's a nice gag where it's like a video of him pedaling a bike the entire time as his lower half. So he's not even riding a bike at all. Again, like you said, I think Nick Kroll makes a nice cameo. We have to talk about the lawyers, specifically that Tina Fey cameos as one of the lawyers.
I thought her cameo was kind of necessary to me almost, because it just to show like this is her show, and I liked that it was done in this way and kind of like in a fourth line character rather than a starring role.
Yeah, though it seemed like I felt like her. Her lawyer character was very similar to Barry Suckercorn from Arrested Development in terms of like bubbly but incompetent lawyer.
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but 100% I agree with you.
And I love the mole, though. The mole was a very nice touch.
Yes, it was just really it was so funny that they were both so incompetent, but they thought they were doing such a solid job. And I loved the storyline of Tina Fey and the Jerry Minor character being in a relationship with each other, and like that's what they were focused on rather than getting this guy in jail. And they're by the end of the trial, they're almost on his side.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like they were constantly swayed by him too, and they're like, oh, why didn't we think of that? Like, I love the statements that they made out loud. They always almost seem to have like the button of every court scene, which again lends really well to the writing and the performance. What did you think of the Martin Short plastic surgeon character?
It made me uncomfortable to look at the screen when he was there.
It's interesting.
I saw an article later. It was a picture of him next to a picture of this guy who is basically the plastic surgeon to the stars, and how you 100% Martin Short's character was based off of this guy. Mm-hmm. So that was a funny thing to me, but it just made me uncomfortable to look at him. And like when Kimmy punched him in the face and his nose moved and he had to like move it back, I like cringed. It grossed me out.
It's interesting because I don't want to make too many comparisons to Arrested Development, but Martin Short made a cameo on there as well. And the weird thing is that like Martin Short is an extremely funny person, but part of me feels that sometimes his style does not gel well with the style of the show that he's on. And this might be one of the cases. I feel like, you know, as funny as it is to watch a man who you can't really, he can't really enunciate because his face is so swollen, I feel like it might have been a little too cartoony, if that makes sense. Granted, this is a very kind of cartoony world.
I definitely feel you. I think it would have fit more in the 30 Rock style,
yeah,
where the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt style is a little bit more dialed back. These characters are slightly unrealistic, but they're very grounded as well, where the Martin Short character was a cartoon rather than a real character with some really funny personality traits.
Yeah. That being said, I always do enjoy Martin Short. He was fine with the time he had on there, but I wonder if it was a little too over the top. I don't know if you watch Breaking Bad, Haley, but Dean Norris, who plays ASAC Hank Schrader, played I forget the name of M. LaLoop, who was Titus's acting coach to teach him how to be straight. Even if you don't know who Dean Norris is, did you enjoy that storyline of Titus learning how to act straight to get a part at his monster themed restaurant?
I was okay with it. I could see why some people wouldn't like it. It's kind of like, all right, haven't we done this before? But I feel like it was done in almost an extreme way that made it funny, but that made it kind of new and fresh.
Yeah, I liked how intense it was. And I think that the cap that really did it for me was at the end of the episode when like there's a guy behind the bar and we see Titus like end up delivering a line straight so much that he offends a woman, and it turns out that it's M. LaLoop behind the bar. Like, it just seemed ridiculous enough that it made it funny. But I can definitely understand this show handled having a gay character on it very, very well, I believe. You know, Titus wasn't just about the fact that he was gay, you know, that he spouted a catchphrase and then everyone laughed. This isn't in the vein of Will and Grace. So I was happy that that in general, they've been able to traipse around issues of like sexuality and race pretty well to not make it too offensive.
Do you also think it was kind of interesting that Kimmy Schmidt's character was just automatically so okay with him?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we don't know too much about Durnsville as a community, and I don't want to make too many assumptions about a middle America, but one of the blunt stereotypes about it is that they are very conservative and narrow-minded. So the fact that, you know, her first friend that she makes in New York is a gay black man, and she kind of doesn't bat an eyelash about it, is a little weird, especially since, again, she kind of has the mind of a 13-year-old at this point.
Well, and also living in, like, a very overtly religious cult for 15 years. Like, you think that would have been one of those things that they, you know, discuss. But I guess if you're in a bunker with one guy and four women, it's not something that came up.
Especially when they were doing sex stuff to each other in the bunker.
So, yeah, I thought that was like, I was fine with the way they handled it, but just in the vein of how good they were at making things seem like she was missing for 15 years, like she missed that 15 year gap of culture and all that stuff, like you would think that would be something that maybe she wouldn't have as good of a handle on.
Yeah, and I wonder if they kind of lost the opportunity, or they'll explore the opportunity to have some more storylines of that, of like Kimmy getting used to the world of like being a gay black man. I also love for Titus how there was one episode where he dealt with the fact that he was quote unquote old. And that ties into one of my more favorite moments of the series, which was that construction worker who like slowly he tried to catcall Kimmy and then got a weird response from her.
Oh God, I love that so much.
Well, the fun fact, I don't know if you saw this article, Haley, but apparently this man also played a construction worker in 30 Rock I don't know if they had the same name, but it led some people to believe that this took place in the same universe. I have no idea if it's true, but I think it's funny that if Tina Fey and Robert Carlock are calling upon the same character actor to play the same construction worker, basically.
And that would be another really clever throwback. Also, I want to know where I can get my own baby slut t-shirt. Titus was wearing.
Yeah, I hopefully they sell those. I don't know if Netflix really does merchandising, but I would love to have a baby slut shirt or like a daddy's boy shirt. Any of those I think would sell well on the market.
I agree.
So do you have any other things you want to say about the show, Haley? Any overall thoughts about it and you know, what you're looking forward to in season two?
I love the cleverness of it. The humor is so smart and you're not going to catch everything. And I'm really excited to go back and watch this again to see what else I pick up. It was just a really fun show. And I kind of wish I had the opportunity. And I mean, yes, this is my fault that I watched it all in like 2 days, but I would have loved to see it, you know, go over a span of weeks and kind of digest it slowly and kind of think about what's going on rather than just kind of go at it all at once.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the additional benefit will be of doing it on a rewatch, because I do agree there will certainly be references that you'll catch the second time around, and it might even be like a Community Beetlejuice thing of like there's a Long Con reference that exists throughout the first 13 episodes that the internet won't realize until a month or so later. I think after watching this that I forgot how much the comedy world needed this type of humor. You know, I feel like Parks and Rec is a nice mediary between this and some of the more heartfelt sitcoms out there, but this is like a joke a minute, off the wall insane type of show, and I had forgotten how much I wanted that since 30 Rock left. So I wholeheartedly love this show. It made me cackle out loud several times. The probably the most being in the second episode when that Titus pointed to the thing that was supposed to be Miss Piggy. I can't do the image justice, but it's fantastic. So I'm really excited for season two. I don't know when it's going to be, but I just hope they keep this madcap sense of humor. And, you know, 30 Rock kind of lagged in its middle seasons, and I'm hoping that Kimmy Schmidt is able to retain some sense of its chaotic humor in order to do well in its second season.
And I'm really looking forward to see what they'll do with it now that they know they're on Netflix. Like what kind of, they'll probably skew a little with a little more dirty humor, with word choices, with costumes, with, you know, just visuals in general. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. So you think we're going to see boobs on season two?
Probably not. I don't think we're going to go there, but I think that it's going to be a little more risque than what we saw this season. All especially right. With Kimmy growing up into, you know, her quote unquote teenage years.
Will we see butt cracks in season two?
Probably.
All right. So you heard it here first. Season two of Kimmy Schmidt will be the season of butt cracks. Before we go, Haley, how can people reach out to you on social media?
So you can find me on Twitter at hstrong_. And I have a blog. I write about a bunch of things. That's haleystrong.wordpress.com. And we just wrapped up this season of The Bachelor over on the Wrap Up Network. I do that podcast with Amy. But you can go back and listen to all of those episodes as well.
And as always, you can find me at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. I'm always around post show recaps and the Rob Has a Planet atmosphere, currently covering Once Upon a Time majorly, but working in a bunch of different capacities here and there. And while you're staying tuned to post show recaps, please listen out for all our other coverage. Speaking on the subject of Netflix, House of Cards recaps just finished with Rob Cesternino and Zach Brooks. We have recaps of Justified, SNL, Sons of Anarchy. Oh, not Sons of Anarchy. That was a while back. I'm living in the past, clearly, when I was in that bunker podcasting. Walking Dead, A Game of Thrones is coming back soon. So there's a myriad of things for you to check out on this website. So that's going to do it here. Haley Strong, thank you for joining me. Do you have a hashtag for those of us that have made it through and are ready to escape the bunker of this podcast?
Oh my gosh, I haven't even been thinking of one. Do you have any ideas?
We could do hashtag Daddy's Boy.
Oh, that's it. We're doing right. that.
Hashtag Daddy's Boy. Let's revive this oft-forgotten 30s musical. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, thank you, Haley Strong, for joining me. And troll the respawn, Jeremy.
Like a bunch of tucks of 20 fields. And I said, Nathan, is this for real? 1, 2, 3, 4 girls come out. 1, 2, 3, 4 girls come out. Unbreakable. They alive, damn it. It's a miracle. Unbreakable. They alive, damn it. With females on strong as hell. Unbreakable. They alive, damn it. It's a miracle. Unbreakable. They alive, damn it. With females on strong as hell.
Shmo Yoho.
The original video. It's from our new favorite comedy show. And you can watch more of us too. If that's something that you'd like to do. Shmoyoho, accent on the yo. Shmoyoho, accent on the yo. Shmoyoho.
But what happens to Kimmy Schmidt?
Kimmy don't take no Schmidt.
Oh, unbreakable. They love Dan.